Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Murder and Misery, our true crime podcast. We are your hosts. My name is Heather, and I know absolutely nothing about true crime.
And my name is Jillian, and I consider myself somewhat of a true crime expert.
Yes, Jill is our resident true crime expert. And we created this podcast so that Jill could teach me about all things true crime, both locally and nationally, and to take you guys along for the journey, so that if you too know nothing about true crime, you can learn something. Or maybe hear another perspective about stories you already know.
Okay, so before we get started, this case was a request by my mother, Gina. Now, I do want to say, disclaimer, if somebody requested this, like, forever ago, I don't know because our book got eaten.
Yes, please remember, we are not trying to be rude.
Yeah.
We no longer have those requests.
Right, so if they're old, I have, like, the list of new ones, but my mom was like, she said, oh, I love the idea of, like, your Halloween series. Oh, what about for November? We do a series of families getting murdered. And I'm like, for Thanksgiving.
I don't understand. I don't know. Gina, I'm not making the connection quite how you are.
I was like, no, we're not doing that.
Families getting murdered for Thanksgiving.
Just like, it's a time to be with your families. And some get murdered. Like, what?
Wow.
yes, so.
Way to make you feel festive for the holidays.
Yeah, I mean, we do know Thanksgiving was not a very fun time. So, but I do want to say before we start this is a gruesome case that mentions miscarriage, child assault, and child death. So listener discretion is advised. The story takes place in 1894 in Browning, Missouri, which is about 3 hours from us in the north central part of Missouri. This case involves two families, the first being the Taylor brothers, George and William. They were upper class, being some of the most wealthy and prominent citizens in that part of Missouri. William was a graduate of the Missouri University of Law, and he served in the Missouri General Assembly and also worked for the People's Exchange Bank in Browning, Missouri. George was a farmer, but a very successful one. The second family is the Meeks family. This family consisted of husband Gus, wife Delora, and their kids. Unfortunately, they were not so well off. Gus was a tenant farmer who worked on the land owned by the Taylor brothers. By the early 1890s, it became clear that the Taylors were involved in some shady dealings, like forgery, larceny, arson, and cattle rustling, which we talked about in a other episode. Do you remember what that is?
No.
It was where people steal other people's farm animals, and you were like, nobody better steal my chickens.
Cattle rustling?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I do not recall.
I think
my brain has cut it out.
I believe we've talked about it twice, but it may have just been one time. But I remember being like, cattle rustling, it just sounds like rounding up cattle.
Yeah.
Not like stealing them.
I
mean,
that's exactly what I thought whenever you said it. So, okay, I'll try to remember that for the next time you bring that up.
I mean, it can only happen so many more times in these stories, so.
You never know.
True. But somehow, Gus Meeks got mixed up in the cattle rustling, too. From what I read, they lured another farmer's cattle onto their land and then got that cattle to Chicago, where they sold it. It is unclear how often this had been done or how often it happened, or the details behind it, but at some point, both Gus and William Taylor were arrested and indicted for the crime. Not surprisingly, George, who was the farmer, was implicated too. After they were arrested, Gus apparently quickly confessed and was sentenced to prison. I'm not sure how long he was in jail, but we do know around April of 1894, the governor of Missouri pardoned Gus in exchange for promising to testify against the Taylor brothers. So he was released and went back to the farm with his family, which, why would you do that? Like, I feel like these are very, obviously, rich people, and you're just gonna send them back to where they were, knowing that they should be in witness protection, is my opinion.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, I can see why you would
think. Especially because they sent him back to where he works, which is the farm that the guy owned, so.
Oh, well, I just assumed he wasn't going to work, I guess.
Well, I don't know.
But either way, they know where to find him.
Right, yeah. So, the Taylor brothers were out of jail on bond or something. So, of course, They did not want Gus to testify against them, so they offered him $1,000 if he would leave the area, or some people said if he would leave the country and not testify. In today's money, this is about $34,500, which is a lot, especially if you're poor. On Thursday, May 10th of 1894, the brothers showed up at the home where Gus, who is now 33, lived with his pregnant wife, Delora, who is 30, and their three daughters, Nellie, who is 6, I think it's such a cute name, and Hattie, 4, also a very cute name, and their 18-month-old sister, Mary. Gus's mother lived there, too. Gus went outside with the Taylor brothers for a bit, and then went back into the home and told his wife that the brothers were going to help him get away. Delora feared for her husband going anywhere with the Taylor brothers, as she should.
Right.
So she insisted that if he was going, her and the kids were going to go too, because she thought, you know, it's not like they could, like, hurt all of them or do some sketchy stuff. So they all agreed, and on a dark night, loaded the family into a wagon with the Taylor brothers, leaving Gus's mother at home. Instead of taking them out of the area, they only went a short distance east of Browning, Missouri. One of the Taylor brothers got out of the wagon and began to walk beside it and shot Gus Meeks, who jumped from the wagon and tried to run. Delora, who was pregnant at the time, began to scream and started to jump out when both she and 4-year-old Hattie were also shot. The 6-year-old Nellie and her baby sister Mary were beat in the head with what was later determined to be a rock. The murderers then loaded the family into the wagon and hauled them nearly 2 miles to the Taylor farm, where they were buried under a stack of straw. Some sources said there were 2 other men waiting for them there, but there wasn't anything about possible accomplices, so I'm not really sure if that was the case.
Yeah.
There is a headline from the St. Joseph Herald that told of the murders a day after they occurred. It said, quote, "A most atrocious crime was committed last night near Browning. Gus Meeks, his wife, and 2 children were murdered outright, and another of Meeks' children, a girl, 7 years old, was so badly injured that she may not recover. However, Nellie, one of the girls hit in the head with a rock, did recover. After she was knocked unconscious, or, in her words, quote, went to sleep, she later woke up. Believe it or not, the 6-year-old girl, who probably just witnessed the most horrifying thing of her life, decided to, quote-unquote, play dead. The men had placed her, along with the bodies of their family members, in a shallow hole covered with bales of hay. Nellie later recounted that one of the men proceeded to kick her in the back and make a comment about making sure everyone was dead. She also heard them talking about setting the hay on fire, and there was evidence that they tried to set the hay on fire, but they couldn't get it to catch fire because of the rain that had happened recently. They eventually gave up, thank God, because...
Yeah, then she would have burned alive.
Right. Nellie likely passed out and probably maybe went to sleep, but she was too terrified to move. Sometime the next morning, she woke up and somehow managed to crawl out of the shallow grave, which, thank God, they used hay and not dirt also, because that is a fear. I can't imagine what she was feeling, but...
Yeah.
When she looked around, the first house that she saw was George Taylor's. She started to go there, but looking around, saw a house much closer, thankfully. This house belonged to the Carter family. So she went there and tumbled into the house, half dazed.
Could you imagine if she had walked to George Taylor's house?
That, yeah. I feel like there's so many,
yes, like... so many ways that this could have gone differently.
Right, and so many, like, things that went wrong that actually, like, saved her, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, she went into their house and, of course, was, like, bloody and dirty and had a huge gash on her forehead. She told Miss Carter that, quote, "Papa and Mama are dead and buried in the straw in the field," and that her sister was dead, but baby was not dead yet, end quote. I'm sure Miss Carter was freaking out. I would also freak out if a little child came to my house. Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't know about Mrs. Carter's husband. He may have been dead. Like, she may have been a widow or divorced, or he just wasn't there. But it was just Miss Carter and her 10-year-old son named Jimmy. And so Miss Carter decided to send her son to see if her story checked out.
I'm frightened.
I'm just like, come on. Like, take this girl to a hospital. I know that you can't call 911, but, like, get her somewhere. Don't... Whatever. But, so, Jimmy Carter went to look in the place that the girl described, but came back and said he couldn't find anything. Nellie insisted that this was true and said that she would go with Jimmy to show him where the bodies were. She quickly...
I hope they don't get caught.
Well, she quickly led the boy to the exact spot where her family was, and Nellie even uncovered the faces of her parents to show him, and I just can't imagine.
I'm also wondering about that, like, in the mom's... I don't understand the mom's point of view. Like, why would you put your son through that?
Right.
Like, you go look at the dead bodies, and then you come back and let me know if they're actually there.
That's what I'm like. Were people just really built different? I know we say that a lot, but, like, what the heck,
like,
lady?
Yeah, like, okay, you be traumatized. I don't want to be traumatized.
Right. And why wouldn't, like, if you really were, like, thinking that she just made it up, why wouldn't you go?
Yeah, and then, like, if you didn't want her to be alone with your son, well, then you sent her outside alone with your son.
Yeah.
You know, like, initially I was like, oh, well, maybe she's afraid of this girl.
Right.
So she doesn't want him to be, want her to be there by herself with him and potentially harm him. But then she was like, yeah, you guys can go over there together.
Maybe, I don't know, ride to the sheriff's office and have them go together. I don't know. Yeah, that didn't make any sense. But when Jimmy and Nellie got back to the house, the boy told his mom that the story was true. So then the mom went to look for herself.
Oh my gosh. We are wasting time here, Carter family.
Yeah. And then, believe it or not, she sent the boy out again to the neighbors, knowing a killer is nearby, her 10-year-old son, to go. You know, it doesn't make any sense.
I am confused.
So on his way to the neighbors, guess who he ran into?
One of the Taylor brothers.
Yep. George Taylor, who is hanging around a haystack trying to smooth out the wagon tracks with a disc. Probably thinking he was just working on the farm, the boy warned him that there was some dead people in the straw and not to plow over them.
That's what you get for sending a 10-year-old. I mean, it's not his fault. But also, like, oh, that makes me so mad.
Like, why would you go and tell all the neighbors? Why wouldn't you be like, go get the sheriff or
there
deputy?
There might not have been police.
What is this, like, almost 1900s or something?
Police just did not exist how they exist today.
Well, there's always been,
for the longest time.
Like, sheriffs or something, right?
I don't know.
Like, even Western times.
I don't know.
They needed to get somebody.
They needed help, for sure. I'm not telling you that you're wrong. I'm just saying, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. But, of course, you know, he was, like, I assume was acting, like, shocked. Like, oh my gosh, there's dead people over there? Wow. You know? I'll make sure not to plow over them. I don't want that to happen. So, he said...
I am just perplexed.
Well, he...
This story is so unbelievable.
He told Jimmy that he would go get authorities and told Jimmy to wait there while he goes to get his wagon to get authorities. So, of course, he never came back. And the boy was like, oh, okay. That was probably stupid. Instead of going to get authorities, he went and got a horse and started going to where his brother lived. When the little boy realized he wasn't coming back, he eventually went to get the neighbors, and then authorities got involved. Here's what Nellie told them. Quote, when we were going up the hill, the man without whiskers, which is just, it's so heartbreaking, said his feet were cold and got out and walked alongside of the wagon and shot Papa, and Papa jumped out and started to run. Then Mama screamed and started to jump when they shot Mama and sister. They hit me in the head and I went to sleep. End quote. After she went to sleep, she said that she knew no more until they threw her out of the wagon into the stack, which seemed to have woke her up. She said she could hear, but could not move or speak or cry out. She said, quote, when the man put me in the straw, the one with whiskers kicked me on the back and said, quote, they're all dead now, the dang villain sons of bees. End quote. The doctor who examined Nellie confirmed her statement by the bruise on her back. Nellie continued, quote, they covered me up so I could not breathe good. I heard them say it would not burn as it would not catch. end quote. At the spot where the murders happened, the prints could be seen on the side of the road where the bodies had fallen, in large pools of blood on the grass and leaves on the side of the road. Here, the pistol was found with three chambers empty, along with the rock which the smaller children had been killed with. Side note, a weird thing that I saw is, quote, the Meeks family murders are listed as infamous axe murders, which doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So
I'm confused.
Yeah, because everything I saw was like they were shot or hit with a rock. So I don't know if that's just like a legend that people made up with the axes because of like the gash on her head. But that didn't make any sense. Why they were axe murder? Because it wasn't an axe murder.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe there's just, this is also old. So who knows? But the bodies were then loaded into the wagon and drove about 2 miles past George Taylor's house, through the meadows on the freshly planted corn ground to the old straw pile. There was a grave about 2 feet wide and 3.5 feet long and 16 inches deep. So it is likely that they were not obviously thinking that his family was going to come and they were just going to kill him. So Meek's body was placed with head and arms on the bank. Miss Meeks was placed reversed ways beside her husband. The baby was under her and at the side, the 4-year-old girl was beside him and under. That was a very confusing way to try and get a mental picture of what happened. But unfortunately, like we said before, Delora was about 7 or 8 months pregnant. One report said that when she jumped from the wagon, she miscarried and the baby was thrown in the grave with the family. How Nellie was in the grave, we don't really know. And just like Nellie had said, they tried to burn the straw because a wool blanket was buried close by, which was still burning when they found it the next day. The bodies of the Meeks family remained where they were buried that day until about 5 o'clock. It was about dark when the coroner of Lynn Co. got there. After the investigation, the bodies were put in coffins and brought to the undertaker. He was quoted saying, quote, "Be it said to the eternal disgrace of Lynn County that women's and children's bodies were placed in those unlined boxes in all that dirt, blood, old clothes they had lain in all day and unwashed with only, quote, furniture packing and old clothes stuffed around them." He and other citizens carefully took the bodies out and washed the blood off and dressed them nicely in clean burial clothes. He then took the coffins and lined them, fixed them in decent shape, and put mountings on them. Then they were set in the quarters of the courthouse, where that evening and Sunday morning, the remains were viewed by thousands of people from the town and surrounding country. On Sunday morning, the remains were placed in a wagon, and the funeral procession moved towards the Butte Cemetery in Millen, Missouri. The grave was dug 10 feet wide and all the bodies put in one grave. There are separate grave markers for the two little girls. After the discovery of the bodies and the story from Nellie, indictments were soon issued for William P. Taylor and George E. Taylor for the murders of the Meeks family. The Taylors probably had resources to be on the run for a long time, as they were very well off. They checked into the Gleason Hotel and seemed to be enjoying themselves after they had murdered an entire family. I can't imagine. No one probably suspected that these prominent-looking men were murderers, which we now know is not true. But on June 25th of 1894, a little over a month after the murders, the Taylor brothers were arrested in Batesville, Arkansas. Though they offered a bond of $50,000 each. Like, usually, like, the court's like, oh, you can be on bond. They were like, no, like, I'll give you $50,000 if you let me go.
Did that work?
No, it didn't.
Oh, okay.
They thankfully refused it.
Sometimes rich people get to do what they want, which just doesn't feel right, but sometimes it happens.
Yes. Thankfully, not in this case, but, like, I don't know. That just blows my mind that they were that arrogant to be like, I don't know. But anyway, the plan for the Taylor brothers were for them to be transported back to Missouri by train for a trial in Carlton, Missouri. But apparently the citizens of Missouri were outraged, as they should, and planned to take care of the Taylor brothers themselves.
Oh.
The authorities found that 250 heavily armed men who had their faces covered in handkerchiefs were waiting for them in Brooks Field, Missouri, so the train had to divert to St. Joseph, Missouri, so the brothers could stand trial in March of 1895. The Taylor brothers were charged with all four murders, Gus, Delora, and the two girls, as well as the assault against Nellie. After the trial, a letter recovered from the Meeks house was read. It said, Browning, Missouri, May 10, 1894. Be ready at 10 o'clock. Everything is right. It was clear who the letter came from and who it was to because the letter was written on a letterhead of the People's Exchange Bank of Browning, where William worked.
Mm-hmm.
The letter was mailed to the Burlington train addressed to Gus, and the receiving stamp of the post office shows that the letter to have been received at 2 p.m. on May 10th of 1894. People familiar with the handwriting of William Taylor testified that the letter and addresses were written in his handwriting. Mrs.
Well, unless you just aren't going to take Nellie's word for it, I don't even feel like we need all of this. Like, Nellie quite literally saw you shoot her dad and her mom and whack her sister in the head and then whack her in the head. Like,
true, but you do have to remember that one of them went to law school. So I feel like he was like... She has head trauma. She's incompetent, you know, type of stuff.
Yeah, but also this little boy told you there are dead bodies on your property and then you proceeded to run away.
True.
There are two... Like, you did it. I'm sorry.
Oh, they... Yeah, for sure. Mrs. Meeks, who is Gus's mom, testified that the night of the murders, two men came to the house. She said that she knew who they were.
I forgot. She was there the whole time.
Yeah, well, she...
Okay, I was really worried about Nellie, what was going to happen to Nellie.
Yeah.
But now she has a grandma.
Yeah. Thankfully, she stayed back, but she knew that they were the Taylor brothers because she had seen them many times before. And she said that only one came inside the house, and she said that she recognized him as William Taylor. Besides the mother, there were also people who testified seeing both the Meeks and the Taylors' wagon on the night of the murders. Others testified to hearing gunshots, and several saw the brothers leaving the area where the bodies were found. A farmer named Tom Delaney...
Clearly they did it, and I'm not trying to say they didn't, but if you're telling me that you saw the Taylor brothers leaving the area where the bodies were found, like, of course, it's on their farm.
Yeah.
And they literally of course left. They're going to be there.
They left with them. Like,
you know?
Yeah. But the farmer named Tom Daly testified that coming from his farm and going into town, he saw George Taylor on the road on a forced ride, whatever that means. Apparently, George rode into town, got William, informed him of the discovery, obviously, like, after.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that they both passed again and were riding hard and went east. They were dipping out. Like,
I mean, of course you would if you had the ability to do so and you're a terrible person.
Right.
Which clearly you are since you just murdered this family.
With no remorse. Like, ugh.
Yeah, and then you went and partied it up.
Disgusting.
They are disgusting.
Though the evidence was circumstantial, there seemed to be a little doubt as to their guilt. However, after 2 days of deliberation, the jury reported that they were hopelessly deadlocked at 7-5 for conviction. A mistrial was declared. It was later said that one of the jurors and one of the alternates came forward to report that they had been offered $750 to acquit the men. It is unclear whether they were attempting to comply with this, so a new trial was scheduled, obviously. If anybody found these people not guilty, I feel like they got paid. But the second trial began in July of 1895, but it was much different than the first. This time, the brothers were only charged with first-degree murder of Gus Meeks. The idea was that it was much easier to prove the brothers had planned this murder than to believe or prove that they had also planned to murder his wife and children.
I don't think they planned to murder his wife and children. I think they were probably...
either.
The wife was like, you're not going without me. And they were probably like, uh-oh. Well, I guess we'll just fit them all in the hole.
And I have a feeling that that's why they weren't... I mean, like, obviously, if they only shot them, but they had to resort to rocks, like...
Yeah.
You know, as bad as that sounds, which obviously, Like, that was like a godsend for Nelly.
Yeah.
But they only needed one conviction to get the death penalty. During the trials, Nelly was kept in the care of the prosecuting attorney and his wife, who I don't know. Obviously, they're not here anymore, but they just seemed to be good people. She didn't testify in either trial, but she did have to attend the trials, which I'm sure was absolutely devastating. Reports said that during the proceedings, she would occasionally climb onto the prosecutor's lap.
Aww.
I know. I'm like,
I'm sure it was hard. I mean, you have to listen to all the details about your family's death. Like, right? That's terrible.
The jury received the case on August 2nd of 1895, and after deliberating for only an hour and a half, they returned with guilty verdicts for both brothers. Of course, the Taylor brothers appealed, but the convictions were upheld. A date for their hanging was set.
I did not realize we were still hanging people.
A date was set for their hanging for April 30th of 1896. However, the brothers who were being held in the Carlton, Missouri jail escaped on April 11th, 1896.
I'm annoyed.
Mm-hmm. They escaped along with another inmate. They did this by knocking out the bar of their jail cell, and then they went to the roof of the jail and used a 50-foot hose to climb down. Which, fun fact, not the hose part, but remember a couple years ago when people in the Lincoln County jail escaped and, like, climbed off the roof?
No.
Yeah. When? I remember, because it was like, I mean, I think we were still in youth when this happened.
Really?
How do you not? Because that's when they put all the barbed wire at the top of the roof.
I didn't know there's barbed wire now. I never look at the jail.
Well, our church is literally right by it.
So. Right by it.
So, we were, like, on high alert because there was, like, escaped convicts while we were trying to go to church. But, yeah.
Wow. Had no idea. They did the same thing? They used a hose?
Oh, I don't think they used a hose.
Oh.
I don't think there was hoses there, but they did, like, escape from the top. So you'd think that this happened, like, 100-some years ago, that they would have learned.
Well, they did learn. They didn't leave a hose.
They didn't leave a hose. They still got away with it, though. So they climbed down with a 50-foot hose. William Taylor and the other inmate were recaptured fairly quickly, and William was taken to the jail in Kansas City, where it was more secure to await his hanging. On April 30th, the day of his execution, Father Kennedy and Taylor knelt in prayer. Taylor kissed the crucifix and was clean-shaven, and at 6 o'clock, he was given his breakfast, which was 2 fried eggs, 3 buttered biscuits, and a 10 cup of coffee.
3 buttered biscuits? That would make my belly hurt. That's a lot of biscuits.
I put down a lot of biscuits.
It depends on the biscuits. Like, some of them are too dry, and that makes... It's just, like, hard to even swallow them.
Oh, yeah. If we're talking, like, KFC biscuits, that's one thing. But, like, the flaky layer biscuits, put some bacon, wrap it in there, it's good.
I like the flaky biscuits, too, but Darian doesn't like them, so I normally try to get the regular ones. They, like, bother him.
Really?
Yeah, it's, like, a pet peeve of his.
I think they're just perfect for wrapping the bacon in a little blankie before you eat it. Okay.
At any rate, I love fried eggs, but I don't know if I could eat 3 biscuits. It depends. They might have been really good.
I can't imagine how good they would be in the 1800s.
Well, and right before you're going to die. They probably were like, give them the dry ones. Give them the burnt ones.
Yeah. I don't know. I know that they still do the whole, like, last meal thing, mm-hmm. which they seem to take very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So, who knows?
I agree. They do seem to, like, really care about it. I mean, obviously, there are, like, restrictions, mm-hmm. and, like, you can't have everything you want, but they do try to accommodate that.
Yeah. So at 7:30, a mass was held for him, and communion was administered. Fair to say he was Catholic. The town was literally full of hundreds of people from adjoining counties and Lynn and Sullivan counties. Just before 11 in the morning, William Taylor was publicly hanged for the murder of Gus Meeks while spectators looked. He did not make any last statements, but he left a letter behind proclaiming his innocence.
You are not innocent.
I'm sorry, but I just want to say if you kill an entire family.
I think
family,
it's because he went to law school.
Well,
you know, he's just like, let me just leave it open.
I just feel like he's obviously religious, unless that was just a ploy. But, like, you're like.
But also, if you're religious, why did you do all of this? This is you couldn't have been that religious if you're going to go murder these people, because you didn't want to get convicted for your other crimes.
Yeah.
So then, which I'm curious if they did get convicted for the other crimes that Gus was about to
testify
for them, or against them, rather.
Yeah. But his note said, quote, "To the public, I have only this additional statement to make. I ought not to suffer as I am compelled to do. Prejudice and perjury convicted me. By this conviction, my wife is left a lonely widow. My babies are made orphans in a cruel world. My brother mourns and friends weep. You hasten my gray-haired mother and father to the grave. The mobs and the element have haunted me to the grave. I had hoped to live at least till the good people realize the injustice that is done to me, but it cannot be so. I feel prepared to meet my God and now wing my way to the great unknown, where I believe everyone is properly judged. I hope my friends will meet me all in heaven. I believe I'm going there. Goodbye, all. W.P. Taylor." I just want to say that you're worried about your wife being a widow and, like, your kids when you literally, like,
took everything. Left Nellie by
herself. Yeah.
Which you intended to kill her as well. Exactly. So then Gus's mother was just going to sit there and also be hastened to the grave.
Right.
And now Nellie is a literal orphan. I don't feel bad for you.
I don't either. But I'm just like, oh, you're saying I'm going to go to heaven. Do you think God likes when people leave lies and letters before they die? No. I feel like that just takes away your whole communion issue.
Unless they're delusional.
True.
You know? Which, like, 99% of the time that people are murderers like this, I'm like, something's wrong with them.
Yeah.
You know? Like, they're not right in the head. They can't be.
No, but I feel like they were just cruel people. I feel like they probably came from old money, which meant that they just had, like, an entitlement.
100%. You can smell it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But also weird that they come from old money and they were trying to steal people's cattle and then were mad that they got caught.
I don't know for a fact they came from old money, but if you had enough money to go to law school, I'm assuming as much.
I would assume the same.
Yeah. His funeral is held at the Catholic Church in Carlton.
I just feel like you don't get a funeral.
Your
hanging is your funeral. Everybody got to see you die.
I'm not trying to say that, like, we're, like, better people or anything. But, like, I can't imagine a church letting a family killer have their funeral there.
I'm just confused.
I am, too. Which, like, I know.
They literally had mass at the hanging. What, like, why do we need another funeral mass? I'm not Catholic, so I don't understand the ins and outs of all of that, but in my mind, we already did that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it don't make no sense. But, his funeral was that Friday, and the body was put in the Catholic cemetery. His immediate family attended his funeral, and the people were permitted to view his remains at the church. A fancy gray granite monument marks the spot where Bill lies. It bears this inscription: William P. Taylor, born September 22nd, 1861, died April 30th, 1896. George was never captured.
Never captured?
Never. Though throughout the years, his appearance was reported in various parts of the country. There are rumors that he fought honorably in the Spanish-American War. Mm. Others, which, you know, I know they just let anybody join back then, but, like, you would think he would need, like, an ID or something. I don't know. Others said he left the country, and some said he returned to visit his family, but he was never apprehended by the law. So, with all this being said, what happened to Nellie Meeks? Apparently, true crime obsessions and, like, true crime fans existed even back in the 1800s, as we've learned throughout this entire journey. Everyone wanted to hear her story, though there were no podcasts for her to tell them on back then. In between the first and second trial, Nellie was booked for a week-long speaking engagement to tell her story at the Eden Museum in St. Joseph, Missouri. One newspaper said, quote, "She was well-received, drawing in large crowds." Another wrote, "The Standard reporter talked with Nellie Meeks, the only living witness, and described her as blue-eyed, sweet-faced, who is not even 7 years old, and very bright and intelligent. She told the newspaper, quote, two men came to move us away, and we got in a big wagon. The men rode in the spring seat and the family in the rear end of the wagon. When we were going up the hill, the man without whiskers said his feet were cold and got out and walked alongside of the wagon and shot Papa. And Papa jumped out and started to run. Then Mama screamed and started to jump. When they shot Mama and sister, they hit me in the head and I went to sleep. Personally, as much as I am very much for victims getting their stories out there, I don't think it's appropriate to have a child.
Yeah, a six-year-old.
Right.
Continuously repeat this for you.
Right. Like, if she wanted to grow up and write a book, you know, obviously, like, 100%. But the fact that they took her basically, like, on a speaking engagement tour, have, like, and I don't want to say she was forced, because I don't know, but you can't make a child relive those over and over again. She needed therapy, not speaking engagements, but,
I hope she made money.
She did not.
Then, yeah, absolutely inappropriate.
Yeah. As I mentioned earlier, during the investigation and the trials, she was under the guardianships of the prosecutor and his wife, who seemed like good people. After that, she was raised by her grandmother. Nellie married Albert Spray on January 7th of 1904, when she was 16 years old. The newspaper article in the Milan Standard read, A.R. Spray and Nellie E. Meeks of the Morris Township were united in the holy bonds of matrimony in Milan, Missouri, by Esquire Imberton. Nellie was the daughter of Gus Meeks and the sole survivor of the Meeks murder. I wouldn't want that in my wedding thing, but
I don't think so either.
Unfortunately, a little over a year later, the same newspaper reported that, quote, Nellie Meeks Spray, the last surviving, the last surviving member of the Gus Meeks family and wife of Albert Spray, died from childbirth.
No!
I know. She died on March 3rd due to complications after the birth of her daughter, Hattie.
Oh my, that is so sweet.
It is. She was barely 19 years old. Her daughter, Harriet Pauline Hattie, who obviously was named after her sister, mm-hmm. was cared for by her grandmother, Gus's mother. She lived to be 72 years old, and that is the story of the Meeks family murders.
Wow. Why was she not cared for by her father?
I don't know. I feel like that was a very common thing back then, though.
Well, men are trash.
Yeah. I feel like now I know a lot of single dads.
Yeah.
But, like, back then, I feel like...
That wasn't a thing.
That was, yeah. I don't think that was a thing.
Well, you should take care of your children.
Yes.
Even if you're in a relationship and there is a mother, you should still be caring for your children.
100%. Because we know many people who have family issues end up to be serial killers, so don't put your kids through that.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
I would rather not turn this into a series.
No, 100%.
At all possible.
I'm sorry, Mom, but like...
That is little, too depressing.
It's Dita. A little rough. Like, I get the meaning behind it, but like, every month can't be a theme. Like,
and. What an awful theme. Let's talk about families all dying together. No offense, Gina. I really like your ideas, but this one was a little too morbid for me.
Yeah. But I'm glad. I hope everybody did enjoy the whole Halloween theme.
Spooky Halloween.
Yeah. I thought that was fun.
I did too. I really liked those.
Yeah, I thought having a theme was fun, but we can't make everything into a theme.
Yeah, that was... That would be, I would be really sad for the next month. Like, I just don't want to put myself through that.
Yeah. And we need to get back into doing more of the requests. So, knocking those out.
Okay. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. If you haven't already, please follow our social media accounts. If you would like to buy merch, that is still up on our Etsy account. And we will be back together next week with another episode.
All right, bye.
Bye.